Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat here as we are off, off and roaring on a Tuesday, June 11th, 2024, in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, one of the studios. We now have five radio stations under one roof here. This one's 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening. You can listen to the show live anywhere in the world at buckmastershow.com, also the place for all of our podcasts. Pretty much every show we've done since January of 2011 is conveniently at buckmastershow.com for our telephone interviews, and we'll be doing one at the top of the show here momentarily, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. President Biden's administration blocking migrants from claiming asylum at the U.S.-Mexico border until attempted crossings fall under new actions rolled out last week. The new asylum ban allows authorities to quickly deport or send back to Mexico migrants who cross the border illegally without the chance to claim asylum. And the magic number is 2,500 migrants per day. Let's get the take from Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover, a social ethicist who has worked with migrating people along the Mexican-U.S. border here in the Southwest for about 35 years, a native of West Texas. Reverend Hoover has founded and led several nonprofits, including Humane Borders here in southern Arizona. He writes about that effort in his book, Creating Humane Borders. Reverend Hoover is the 2006 recipient of Mexico's National Human Rights Award, bestowed by then-President Felipe Calderon. And Reverend Hoover joins us from his home in Albuquerque. Hey, Reverend Hoover, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you? It's good to be with you.
Always a pleasure. What's your take on this, on the Biden rollout of this new program? Going to do any good, too late, too little, too late? What's your take?
Well, I'll consider it too little, too late. It's a reaffirmation of a lot of Trump's ideas that were done under Title 42 and some other things. It's an interesting thing. I think he's giving away the farm to the right, but right now his administration is also discussing providing deportation protection to undocumented spouses of citizens to sort of regroup support from the left and to garner support from Latinos in both cases, because the polls are changing. Latinos from Brownsville, Texas, all the way to San Diego and as far north as Las Vegas and Utah are getting, they're changing their support for Biden and actually supporting Trump on some of these issues because they think the migration has gotten out of hand. So it's a crazy time we're living in.
The number 2,500 per day for a week, that why that number?
That I have no earthly idea. I think they pulled that out of their back pocket or something. It has to do with personnel deployment. The whole thing's based on personnel requirements because they're saying they don't have enough people to take care of these asylum claims, et cetera. And that's unusual because 20 years ago, for real, the average Border Patrol agent apprehended four times as many people as they do today. So you'd think they're either sitting on their thumbs or something. I think the Border Patrol Union's getting a little too much power. It's one of the things that I think.
When we hear this, let's close the border from the right, is that even possible, Reverend Hoover?
John McCain a long time ago taught us that the United States military, you'd have to bring every soldier, sailor, marine, Coast Guard personnel across in the entire system to quote-unquote close the border. So no one wants to close the border to commerce. No one wants to close it to lawful migration. And we shouldn't want to close the border for asylum seekers because of our core values and what's meant behind that. So
where we're living here in Arizona, and you've seen this over in Texas, about there's a move at the state legislature here, which is still in session. We don't have a budget, and we're quickly running out of time here, the fiscal year ending in a couple of weeks. The voters may be asked to have a say on an initiative that would allow local police to get involved in immigration issues. Do you think that would even be constitutional?
I hope not. It depends on which version of the Supreme Court you're thinking about. Here in New Mexico, we just passed legislation maintaining immigrant-friendly status in Albuquerque and Santa Fe and some other locations to guarantee that we wouldn't get into those paper please kinds of comments that really cause problems in Arizona, in my opinion, and similar actions in Texas. So hopefully we just will not go down that path. It does not serve the economy. It doesn't serve human rights. It does not respect individuals. It does not uphold our core concepts of dignity of an individual residing here.
We're speaking with Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover, who was the founder of Humane Borders, which is still active here in southern Arizona, trying to save lives by putting water stations out. That was about 20 years ago, didn't that? Isn't that when you...
This very day is the 24th anniversary of the founding of Humane Borders.
Is it really?
And it's got great new leadership. It's expanding again. It's raising funds. It's just doing a great service, saving lives.
Well, I didn't know this was the anniversary, but very serendipitous to have you on the show today, talking a little bit about Humane Borders. And you say they're doing still doing great work. Let's talk a little bit about that program, that not Humane Borders, but the program that Congress had before us. That would have really kind of reformed immigration. And we've talked with you on the show before. Let's hear the Reverend Hoover fix about fixing the immigration system.
Well, in order to change the system, the United States has just got to find ways to legalize this whole mess. I don't care if it's asylum, refugees, undocumented workers that want to come here. We've got to take money out of the cartel system. We've got to lift up our neighbors to the south, find out ways to document, inspect, run them through the ports of entry, vaccinate them, control this thing, and return billions of dollars in remittances to the sending countries so that their economies can boom and we can integrate our economies further with trade. So the human resources available and the natural resources available south of our border far exceed what we have here, and we can find better economic ways of doing this. Right now, we're transferring billions of dollars to the cartels by not controlling migration, and the cartels are a huge source of revenue for Mexico, and we're doing things that we don't want to do because the cartels have been responsible for phenomenal violence and assassinations of candidates in this last election. So I have no prediction whatsoever what President Sheinbaum's going to do with the immigration, but I don't see her taking any major steps.
Do you see her, Reverend Hoover, doing anything about the continuing influence of the cartels?
I hope so. But, life for journalists and for politicians and candidates and so forth is really perilous in Mexico. So something has to be done. I don't know. She's a brilliant U.S. educated PhD, very competent human being. She's probably going to be less popular than her predecessor. But I think she's capable of coming up with new plans. I don't know if she can implement them because the cartels are just so firmly rooted right now. It's astounding.
What a very violent, when you think about the homicide rate, some of the highest murder rate in the world, and less than 10% of the murders, I understand, are even investigated or solved in Mexico.
This is correct. I have to point out one thing. You know, it's more dangerous to go volunteer for Habitat for Humanity in New Orleans or somewhere than it is to go spend an equal amount of time in Mexico City. But we hear about the crime and we're concerned about it. And it's almost always targeted crime. It's somebody's interfering with somebody's drug deals, or they're trying to interfere with recruiting plans for the cartels, et cetera. So it's usually targeted. The average person that just goes, keeps their nose clean, is pretty safe down there. So I don't want to scare people, but the overall numbers of deaths are much higher there than they are here.
Yeah, they are.
So you need to pay real close attention to where you go and what you're doing.
All right, Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover, congratulations. The 24th anniversary of the creation of Humane Borders, which is still going strong right here in southern Arizona, trying to provide water stations. And they are not trying. They are providing water stations, and it is saving lives. Thank you, Reverend Hoover.
Thank you.
All right, Reverend Dr. Robin Hoover on the Buckmaster Show. All right, we're going to take a break right here as we get ready for our second segment. Second segment every Tuesday, Shelley Fishman with me in studio. And Shelley's got, well, some little bit sideways. So markets had started off kind of a very down day, recovered some. We'll talk a little bit about that and more with Shelley Fishman right after the break. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Shelly Fishman is a financial advisor and business consultant in Tucson, Arizona. Contact Shelly via buckmastershow.com or directly via email at saf824@earthlink.net.
And here he is, Shelly Fishman. Shelly, how's your week going so far?
The week's going great. How about you?
Pretty good. Thank you for asking. So, kind of like one shoe has fallen, we're waiting for the other shoe because the Fed is meeting this week. I don't know how much anticipation there is this time of a rate cut, but the market will be eyeing a very important mid-year assessment, correct?
Exactly. So what we had last Friday was a very mixed report on employment. And you say, well, wait a second, we had 272,000 jobs created. That's great news, isn't it? Well, yeah. But the total employment number, actually the number of people working, dropped, clicked down a couple hundred thousand. And the unemployment rate clicked up to about 4%. Now, you know, that's just, again, based on the first 2 weeks' data for May. But a mixed report like that, you know, let's pundits like me kind of glom onto the news they would like to glom onto and project that onto the Fed. So, as you know, Bill, I have been very critical of the Fed's reluctance to move interest rates down and their determination to only look at the inflation number. Mm-hmm. Rather than
the bigger picture
mm-hmm. in the economy and the number of people and who are getting hurt by these higher interest rates. So, again, I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that maybe the Fed will at least give us some indication that they intend to bring interest rates down. And, again, the reason for that is to bring down mortgage rates, to bring down credit card rates, and to bring down the cost of financing large things that you might buy, like you know, appliances.
You would think if they see that the unemployment numbers, even going up ever so slowly, are starting to go up, that this might be a good time to click it down a quarter of a point.
Well, you know, the 20th century version of economics says that one of the things the Fed must do to control inflation is to bring the unemployment rate up. And, you know, that was kind of conventional wisdom among economists. But what we've seen now in this century is that, and in the last 10 years of the 1900s, is that you can control inflation and not negatively affect the employment rate. And that's something that people are trying to work through and figure out. But what we're seeing is indications that are just confusing to people. For instance, the wages in this past report clicked up to about 4.1% a year from a year ago, in an inflation period of 3%. So wages, again, we're talking in the macro sense, have been going up for the past 2 years at higher than the inflation rate. Well, that would be alarming to the Fed because increased wages are said to increase inflation because people have more money to spend. They buy more stuff. When demand goes up, companies use it as an excuse to raise prices. So everything is a jumble right now, and it's very hard to forecast how the Fed will interpret these numbers. What we see is the market is not having a lot of difficulty in interpreting these numbers. I mean, I worked these numbers as of close of business yesterday just for the current year, 24 year to date. The Dow's up 3.1%. The S&P is up 13%, and the NASDAQ is up 15.5%. That's just for 6 months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So both the S&P and the NASDAQ are running way ahead of the normal yearly increase of around 12%. The Dow's running behind that, and we're seeing that today again. But when you take a look at price-to-earnings ratios in the Dow, it's over 30.
What should it be? The price-to-earnings ratio, explain that a little bit.
So the P, which is the numerator, is the share price of a single share.
Mm-hmm.
And the denominator is the earnings per share. So when you divide the price by the earnings, you get a number that is a multiple of the earnings. So, you know, if a company is earning $3 a share and their share price is $90,
mm-hmm.
then that's a P/E of 30.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, and there's no, you know, right number or wrong number, but historically, industrial corporations, not counting the NASDAQ, industrial corporations run at around 23. And when that number is higher than that, we say the market's a little overbought. When it's lower than that, we say it's a little oversold. And again, this is in a macro sense. For any individual company, those numbers can vary. But when you have an index of 30 stocks like the Dow running at over 30, you scratch your head and wonder what justifies that. And what justifies it is the investors thinking that the earnings piece of that is going to go up. And that'll bring the average down. But if the earnings in the Dow start rising, the P/E number will go down, but earnings go up. If earnings go up, the price of shares go up. And remember, if you are a manager in a corporation at the very top level, traditional rules would say that your first devotion is to your shareholders getting richer and richer. And the way to make that happen is make shares go up, price of shares go up. So, you know, the only way to make price of shares go up without breaking the law is to have earnings go up. And so all of that plays in. And so if you're a manager, how do you make earnings go up? You make earnings go up either by cutting expenses or by selling more or by laying people off. You have to be very careful in how you forecast the next quarter's earnings or the next year's earnings. But one of your primary functions is to make earnings go up, earnings per share go up. And that's a hard thing to do. Primarily, what you want to do is see growth in the economy, growth in the population. That allows you to sell more stuff. If you don't see that and you still have to make earnings go up, you know, you do some things you don't like to do necessarily, like raise prices beyond what the market can bear or start laying people off and controlling expenses. And we've seen some of that. So it's a balancing act if you're the CEO, and that's just, you know, one stakeholder, your shareholders. But you've also got your customers, so you raise prices, your customers get mad. You know, if you start laying people off, your employees who are stakeholders mm-hmm. get mad.
Morale goes down. Sure.
You know, if you start cutting expenses and therefore your tax bill goes down, your local and state governments start scratching their heads and saying, wait a second, you know, mm-hmm. we depend on you guys paying taxes. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of balancing acts going on. So far, at least so far the past couple of years, the market, which is a forward-looking, theoretically a forward-looking group of investors, is thinking that things are going just fine. We're not going to have a recession. And so we're seeing stock prices continue to improve, despite the fact that, you know, the kitchen table discussions among a sizable portion of the population is expressing really
things cost
single,
more.
Yes, and yeah. So inflation seems to be the big topic. Now, you could say, but, you know, what about the stimulus? You know, what about the fact that the increase in wages over the past 2 years has outpaced inflation? Nevertheless, you know, when a dozen eggs cost $5 and it used to cost $1.90,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a serious concern. So I wish I had a good pat answer for you about how to fix this or how to look at it. What I can say is when you take a look at the rest of the world, our economy is still the envy of industrialized nations. Our inflation rate is down close to where it needs to be. Our unemployment rate is at, 70, 80-year lows. So, you know, the economy is doing for a lot of people, maybe even most people, what it's supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. However, if you fall outside of that norm for one reason or another, there's, you know, serious concerns. And those concerns are you know, kind of bleeding over into our politics and into the national discourse. And, you know, it can be alarming.
All right, Shelley Fishman, always a pleasure. Shell, we'll see what you've got on the table a week from today.
Well, who the Fed will have met and we will have heard from them, and so that should be interesting.
And they'll have a report tomorrow on where we are.
Very comprehensive report.
Mid-year report.
For mid-year.
Yep. Okay, we'll see where maybe Powell won't speak at the news.
Oh, no, he's going to speak.
Okay.
He will definitely speak.
Oh, all right, Shelley, have a great rest of the week. Thank you.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. It's a perfect time of year to get over to Green Things and talk to their very knowledgeable staff about some plants that will do well and thrive in the heat, and especially after we start to get some rain, hopefully in a couple of weeks. You never know. And actually, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago that right now, Southern Arizona is in the long, I think it was the sixth longest dry spell in history. And I think since we first brought that up on the air, I think we've moved up to maybe fourth driest period without any rain. So we really do need some rain. Anyway, Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River. Very knowledgeable people over there. And, of course, I love the owners, Jan and Jack. Have done such a great job with that 13-acre property. They also have Zocalo Village, wonderful imported items from not only Mexico, but really all over the world. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, we always look forward to welcoming back to the show Jeffrey Buchanan, a retired Army three-star general, put in nearly 40 years with his Army career, ending in 2019. At one point, he commanded 6,000 troops on the southwest border. He knows a lot about border issues. We're going to talk with him a little bit about that. He led the military operation in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. He did four tours in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. Graduate, he's a homegrown guy, U of A, ROTC program. He didn't go to West Point. He did it right here, right, General?
Yes, sir. Sure did.
General Buchanan advises Homeland Security. He's a commissioner, one of five Arizona Game and Fish commissioners. He is a volunteer deputy sheriff in Santa Cruz County, and he and his wife are very happily married and live on a small ranch outside of Patagonia. How are you doing, General? Always great to see you.
Thanks, Bill. I'm doing great, but as you stressed, you know, we at my place, we haven't had a drop of rain since April 2nd.
There you go.
And, you know, we had above average rain for January, February, and March. So lots of winter growth, and then now it's so dry, it's waiting to blow up. And we're kind of holding our breath, hoping the monsoons come before the lightning strikes and fires.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad. The record for the longest dry spell is like about 100 days, and I hope we don't hit that because we really need to prevent some of these wildfires that really are already breaking out. All right, General, I've got so much in my stack of stuff for you, but kind of picking up on how we began our program today, we talked with Reverend Hoover, who was the founder 24 years ago today. Today is the anniversary of a group called Humane Borders. People may have heard of them here in southern Arizona. They're the group that put out those giant blue containers of water to help migrants. But we got the take from Reverend Hoover on the Biden administration program, the new kind of guidelines for the border. I'm just curious what your take is on that.
Well, first of all, my congratulations and thanks to Reverend Hoover for trying to take care of people who are just on. In the end, most of them are just trying to survive and do the right thing for their families. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to raise it up a little bit to the 50,000 foot level. You know, a frustrating thing for me is somebody who lives 13 miles from the border right now and has seen this go on for years and years and years, regardless of administration, is we have not been successful maintaining security. But I think and this goes back, you know, Republicans, Democrats, leaders of both political parties. But it's security is just one aspect of it. The way I look at it, security is kind of a symptom of what our immigration policy is or isn't. And so I think we really need to come to grips with it and as a nation decide what we want of our immigration policy. Now, a country is defined by its ability to maintain sovereignty. And if we can't secure our own border, I think you have a question of how sovereign we actually are as a country. So I think we do need border security, but it starts with some decisions about immigration policy. You know, we're a country of immigrants. I was born in Germany. My dad was in the Army. I was born over there.
I didn't know you were born in Germany.
Sure. Yeah, my dad was stationed in Heidelberg in 1959 when
you
I
could
was
actually
born.
Have dual citizenship.
Could have until I was 18.
Oh.
And then, you know, once that gets locked in by one or both countries at that point in time. Mm-hmm. But really my point is we're a country that is built on the idea of immigration. And I don't think there's anybody that would argue that we, in fact, need immigrants to fulfill jobs that current American citizens don't want to do. We need them for agriculture, for all different kinds of things. But personally, I believe that should be controlled. And if they're going to be here and take advantage of our hospitals and our schools, they should help pay their way. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that we need to make sure that we get our policy right, and then the security should follow. I actually believe that in this particular case, President Biden's decision to move people out of the country that entered illegally, I think is the appropriate one. Mm-hmm. But again, from the way I look at it, that's only a subset of the bigger issue, which is immigration policy.
Which was going to be addressed. Both sides worked very hard. We actually had bipartisanship. It's a shame that didn't move forward.
It
really is.
It is a shame.
I mean, because we've been kicking the can down the road, as you point out, actually going back to the 1950s.
Right. And it's frustrating to me when people put politics in front of what's good for the country. So it doesn't matter. Again, I am not a member of any political party. And
you're
nor
an independent.
Will I ever.
Independent, yeah.
That's right. Nor will I ever be. But on both sides of the issue, politics has gotten involved a lot. Instead of doing what's right for the nation, we do what's right for the next election for our own particular perspective.
All right. I want to talk General, I want to move over to the game and fish piece of your life as one of the five commissioners, and we've talked about it with you before. There was another bear attack Arizona, and this one was up in a beautiful area of eastern Arizona. It's been many years since I've been up in Alpine, and I think the elevation up there is about 9,000 feet. It is so pretty. But anyway, a bear attacked a young person.
Yes, that's accurate. Twice the people had, as I read the report, the people had their door open. I think it was a teenager. The bear attacked, left, and came back and attacked again. Ultimately, we removed the bear lethally, as you would anticipate. As far as I know from the autopsy, although I didn't read the final report, there's nothing unusual. I mean, the bear wasn't rabid or anything like
weird.
That.
Weird.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know the rest of the story and what caused the bear to go into that place, you know, but you have to assume it had been habituated to people, whether somebody was actually feeding it or whatever, you know. So we always stress, of course, predators in particular are dangerous animals. We had an elk in Arizona kill a lady last year, you know.
I recall that, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, be very, very careful. I just, you know, wild animals need to stay wild, and if we do things like feed them, we can create all kinds of problems.
So when there is an incident like this, and you always hear that Game and Fish is able to find the animal, is that a difficult task? There's been an attack, and then the Game and Fish rangers will go to try to find the animal. Can that be a challenge?
It can. I mean, it obviously depends on the circumstances. We had a case with a series of mountain lion removals, four of them, out of one particular area in Prescott last month. And they were very easy to find just because of the area they had been hanging out, frankly, eating dogs and cats.
Mm.
But, you know, sometimes I remember last year we had a bear incident.
Was that actually in Prescott?
No, we had that.
The fatal one in Prescott.
Right.
Okay,
but we had another incident up in the Blue Wilderness, which is southeast of Alpine.
Right.
And there we couldn't be sure we found the right bear. There was no real evidence. We ended up taking three bears. Which is never a good day.
No,
but
that's not
we
a
had
good
a bear
day.
Attack a campsite.
Yeah.
Didn't actually hurt a person. So
it was a guessing game.
Sometimes it can be. I mean, if you have good tracks or evidence, it's easy to follow, but sometimes it can be tough.
All right, we'll pause right here. More with General Jeff Buchanan on the Buckmaster Show. Always a ton of things to talk about with the general. We'll be right back. It's Buckmaster on a Tuesday.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
PIMA Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's Metropolitan Planning Organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We love to send a lot of listeners, especially this time of year, to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. And it's pretty easy to the selling point here. It's going to be cooler, 10 to 15 degrees usually cooler than Tucson in the summertime. That's 90 degrees over there. That's kind of a warm day, actually, for Silver City. But when you look at it in the big picture with Tucson, it's going to be at least 10 degrees cooler in Silver City, only about a three-hour drive, well worth your time, east of Tucson. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. And once you're there, I really believe you will enjoy the cooler temperatures over in Silver City. General Jeff Buchanan is with us, retired three-star general. Well, it's the elevation, isn't it? You get over there, we're talking about Alpine, Arizona, 9,000 feet. It's great to be over there this time of year.
It sure is. Yeah, I've got my daughter's brother-in-law. So her husband's brother has a big ranch over in that area, just between, essentially between Hennigan Meadow and Morenci.
Mm-hmm.
So right there on the border with Arizona and New Mexico, it's beautiful, beautiful country.
Always a pleasure to have General Buchanan with us. Spent nearly 40 years with his Army career and retired out as a three-star general. And, we had the 80th anniversary of the Normandy invasion. And I learned before the show today that you were actually involved a few years ago. Was it for the 40th anniversary?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Tell me about what that was like.
So June 5th. 1984, for the 40th anniversary, I and probably about 150 paratroopers from the 82nd Airborne Division, we linked up with the parachute regiment from the British Army in the UK, did some training together, and then we did a combined jump into the original drop zones near St. Mary Glace as part of the 40th anniversary. We also, the great thing there was we got to link up with a number of veterans, including Jim Gavin, who'd been the wartime commander of the 82nd. I don't know if you remember seeing the movie The Longest Day.
Longest Day.
There was this scene where the British glider commander, Major Howard, you know, said, you know, in Pegasus Bridge, we got to meet Major Howard, so... That was, it's hard to believe that was 40 years ago.
Wow, so you met a lot of the major players.
Oh, yeah, and it was great. We went and studied the terrain and looked at the details of the fight.
What and was that terrain like? What was the jump zone like? It was pretty challenging, wasn't it?
Yes, back, back in those days, we jumped on the original drop zones, which were essentially hedgerow country, 100 by 100 meter square pieces of open ground surrounded by 40 to 50 foot tall trees. So when you jump with that in a parachute, you know, it's pretty easy to get make a bad landing or land in a tree.
Which did
nowadays,
happen, unfortunately,
right? And many, many guys actually drowned during the...
What?
The Germans had flooded the fields... And it was hard to detect on, we didn't have satellite imagery, but hard to detect with aerial photographs back then. So a lot of these drop zones were actually underwater, and the troops jumping on them didn't know that, and they landed in water. You know, that might only be a couple of feet deep, but deep enough if you got tangled up in your parachute to drown. So very tough night. We had a... we had a saying that we still use today, which is LGOPS, which is LGOPS, little groups of paratroopers. And the whole point was these guys landed, they knew that all they were trying to do was disrupt the German defenses and disrupt the Germans' ability to attack or defend the beachheads. And so they just went around creating havoc. And it had an immense effect. Three airborne divisions, American 82nd, 101st, and the British 1st Airborne Division, you know, starting at about midnight between June 5th and 6th.
Dropping in the middle of the night?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the safest way to do it because you get less ground fire.
Yeah.
But in any case, it was wonderful to be there for the 40th anniversary. That particular area of France, the people love us, you know, and it was a wonderful celebration with a bunch of veterans who were still alive at that time. They're down very, very few now.
How many troopers do you think were involved in the whole total drop when you included the British as well?
Probably, it wasn't quite as big as the airborne invasion of Holland. I'm going to guess and say probably around 30,000 troops, you know, and it was both gliders and parachutes.
Wow. Of course, that famous scene where a trooper comes down at the church.
That actually happened, of course, played by Red Buttons in the movie, but it was St. Mary Glees, the chapel there. And if you go there today, there's they have a mannequin with a parachute there hanging off of that church.
Yeah.
It's basically a very, very horrific night, but it made a lot of difference.
Did I hear that there was a trooper that played dead and then the Germans took him as a prisoner?
Right.
Yeah. I'm sure that happened a couple of times.
That was the, I can't remember the name of the guy, John's. It'll come to me probably in the middle of the night tonight. Yeah. but yes, there's a bar there in the town of St. Mary Glees now named after John Steele. John Steele Bar, I think, is the name of it. So it's named after John Steele, who was the guy hanging off of that chapel.
Mm. All right. Only about 3 minutes to go. Of course, we still have what's going on, the fighting in Israel and the Ukraine. Begin with Ukraine. Where are we on that?
It has gone back and forth.
They're getting some armaments from the United States and other places.
And in Europe. The fighting has gone back and forth, and I think the latest gains have been made by the Russian forces. It has just turned into largely what you could consider a stalemate in.
Think of World War One. Right?
Yeah, I mean it's if you think of it in terms of terrain, there hasn't been gross movements of terrain one way or the other for quite a while. But that doesn't diminish how many people are actually being killed in the fighting. It's pretty horrific. And
you
of
would
course,
think at
it's
some
not,
point Ukraine is on the a short end here when it comes to men and women that are available to fight.
Well, just maybe as far as numbers, of course their spirit and morale is very different than the Russians and the Russian forces. And Putin continues to, under his leadership, the Russian military continues to attack what we would consider, not authorized targets, civilian infrastructure, power stations, everything else. It's, the list of war crimes against Putin are mounting. I don't know if he'll ever come to justice, but again, this is brutal execution of combat, that started with an unprovoked attack by the Russians.
Yeah, and then you look what's going on in Gaza, right?
Yep. I think in this case, you could clearly say, we had the discussion several programs ago about the difference between justice of war and justice in war, the two big standards for war crimes. And it's easy to defend Israel's right to defend itself, so their war is just in terms of the cause.
Mm-hmm.
I think time will tell and actual evidence will tell whether there were war crimes committed in the execution of it. To what extent did they deliberately target civilians or not do what one should do to separate civilian from military targets, et cetera. And I'd just be really careful. People are quick to make judgments on it, and I won't make a judgment on it because I don't know what the actual evidence and facts are.
I had a quick question from a listener, and we're out of time. Basically, are those U.S. Military weapons going to make a difference in Ukraine, in your opinion, is the question?
I think over time they will make a difference, but all the technology in the world it helps, but it starts with the fighting spirit and the morale and, effective leadership and these kinds of things. I do believe the Ukrainians have that. I know that we are participating, as are many NATO countries, and training them on the use of these weapons, and so they'll be more effective.
All right, General Buchanan, always a pleasure, and good luck up in Alaska. Hope you'll be cooling off, right, on the fishing boat.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Good reminder that I'm not 25 anymore.
Okay.